Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning. Please be seated. Our first matter this morning is 2022-0359 in the matter of In re TDS. On behalf of the appellant, Ms. Hammersmith. Good morning.
Good morning. Chief Justice Kennedy, may it please the court, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, if I may. Ohio's law recognizes that if TDS were an adult, the police would be prohibited from employing a two-step interrogation process where they question first and administer Miranda warnings.
So was this two-step interrogation process argument raised below?
Yes, it was, Your Honor.
Where? Because I searched the briefs and I can't find word one of it.
It was raised first at the trial court.
Exactly how was it raised?
It was raised via a motion to suppress.
And where in that motion? I've looked at the motion to suppress. Where in that motion to suppress was it?
In the motion to suppress, trial counsel asked for all of TDS's statements, both pre- and post-warning, to be suppressed. It wasn't until the trial court...
Okay, but that's not what I ask you. How did you raise this two-step interrogation argument?
It wasn't until the trial court made its ruling that the two-step interrogation delineation came to the front.
What do you mean by that?
The trial court actually did suppress his pre-warning statements, finding that it was a custodial interrogation and that he did not voluntarily, knowingly, and intelligently waive his rights. Thus came the question of whether his post-warning statements should be suppressed.
Okay, if I want to look at those post-warning statements, where do I find those in the record before us?
What do you mean, Your Honor?
What do I mean? I'll repeat the question. If I want to find those post-warning statements, which we would need to in order to suppress them, where would I find them in the record?
The post-warning statements were given at the station house by TDS.
Again, that's not my question. Where in the record can I find those? Because if we're going to suppress them, we need to look at those statements and see what they were.
They were recorded as a part of the police report.
Again, where in our record would I find those?
Are you asking me a specific transcript?
You're the appellant. Your duty is, under the rules, to have all the parts of the record in front of us. So where would I find those post-warning statements in the record? Because we can't find them anywhere. Did you make them part of the record on appeal?
Yes, Your Honor. They were talked about at the motion to suppress hearing.
So they were
Let me just finish.
I can't get an answer to this question. Did you make them part of the record on appeal?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, where? What?
There's a couple places. First, they're part of the transcripts. They were discussed a part of the transcripts at the motion to suppress hearing. They were a part of the trial that TDS eventually went to. They were part of the police reports that were a part of this court's record. And they were also videotaped on body cam by the police
officers.
But again,
are those part of the record?
Yes, Your Honor.
I guess you have to show me where, because we can't find them anywhere.
I'd be happy to provide additional briefing for specific citations if this court would like me to.
Excuse me, counsel. Is the body cam joint exhibit 1A?
Yes, it was presented as an exhibit at the suppression hearing. Which is where TDS initially raised the issue about the problem with his statements being taken in violation of his Fifth Amendment rights.
Is joint A, 1A part of the record?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, but where does that body cam stop? Because what you said was I know we have the pre-statements, but what about the post-statements?
Those were discussed at the motion to suppress hearing. The statements that were made were identical to what was made at his home, at TDS's home.
But I don't have any record that shows me that. That's the problem.
So the recording, after he's Mirandized, is there a recording of that interrogation?
I believe there is a recording of the statements that were made at the station house, as well as the other two locations that he went to. both the field on Corlett Avenue and the home that the shooting took place
at. And what exhibit number would that be, those recordings after he's Mirandized at the station house and those two remote locations where he took police? Where would those be? What exhibit number?
I'm not sure of the exhibit number off the top of my head, Your Honor, but I can look that up for this court.
And were those presented to the court of, to the trial court on the, at the motion to suppress?
Yes, Your Honor.
Because what we have to review is just the testimony from the, just the evidence that came in at the motion to suppress.
Yes, Your Honor. And the police officers who interrogated TDS also testified about what statements TDS made at every stage of this interrogation.
So how many confessions did he make? I know there was the one that was made in the home when his mother was there and gone for a while and come back. And after that, he was Mirandized verbally, not in writing. Mm-hmm. How many further confessions were there following that first verbal Miranda warning?
There was one more that was made in the station house around 5 hours after the Miranda warnings were given. In the intervening time, he spent time sitting in the back of the cruiser at the field on Corlett Avenue while there was a search done for the gun. And then he was also taken to the scene of the crime where the shooting occurred and asked questions about that. But as far as his admission to involvement, there were two times.
And did he ever sign a written Miranda statement?
No, he did not. I want to kind of pull the question back a little bit, though. We are asking for this court to apply the Ferris holding to TDS as a child. And so getting into the specifics, the only thing that we need this court to do is to say that the Ferris holding and the Siebert holding apply to children. And this court can remand this case to the 8th District to apply the specific factors, which we believe do apply here.
Thank you.
Would Justice Bringer asked if he signed a waiver. Did his mother sign one?
I'm not aware that his mother signed one. Even if she did, that wouldn't be dispositive of this case. It's a totality of the circumstances test, specifically taking into account his age. That's what JDB held.
So what should have happened under the circumstances when police got information that TDS might be involved? What should have happened?
What should have happened, Your Honor, is what this court said in Ferris, is that in order to function effectively, the police need to give Miranda warnings at the outset of an interview so that a person can reasonably understand that they have the right to talk or to not talk.
How does a police officer differentiate when to give Miranda warnings and when there are questions being posed as part of an investigation?
I think that this court's long-held jurisprudence is that when there's a custodial interrogation, that Miranda is required. I think we're not creating a new law here, Your Honor, because this law already exists for adults, in Ferris.
Right, but you say custodial interrogation. I just want to be clear. So they came to the home, and he was not taken into custody, was not taken downtown, but you're saying the questioning at his home, instead of being investigative questioning, rose to the level of a custodial interrogation?
Yes, the juvenile court actually found that in its ruling on the motion to suppress. We don't challenge that ruling of custody, and the state has not appealed that ruling either. And we agree with that because of the factors that were at play here.
Because of the And how many officers were involved, the length of time of the questioning?
More than that, Your Honor, his age, 15. He had just started the ninth grade. His IQ was a 60, which placed him in the first percentile.
And how long was the questioning at the home alone?
He was questioned for an hour. Then he was given his Miranda warnings. And then he was made to wait in his living room for about 30 minutes before the police arrested him, put him in cuffs, and took him to the field on Corlett Avenue.
Let me ask you about that questioning for an hour. Am I correct that the officers employed a number of techniques in which they were lying to him
Yes, Your Honor.
And it really, from my review of the record, they didn't get a what they believed it was a truthful explanation of his involvement until they actually told him the truth that the victim had died. Is that correct? Is that a right correction of the?
I want to make sure I understand.
Well, it seems to me that they were lying to him. He was being evasive about having any involvement, and then they told him that the victim that they were investigating had died.
Yes.
And that's when the accused broke down and told them their involvement. So in terms of looking at where the interrogation started, if they had showed up and did that in the first place, just we're investigating the death of this, and then we think you may have some involvement, and read him his Miranda rights, would you have any problem with that?
I think the questions you're asking, Your Honor, are going to the question of whether he was in custody.
Mm-hmm. Well, you said that the juvenile court found that he was.
Mm-hmm. And this court needs to find that he was in custody for the first and the second interviews for Ferris to apply. So that's why we point out all of these factors to this court. The interrogation tactics are just one part of it. I think this court is trying to say, you know, whether the LSTAT situation would apply. We argue that this is a different situation from LSTAT.
In what way? How so?
It's different for a number of reasons. Like the hypothetical Your Honor posed, that the police were showing up to Mr. Elstad's house in that case as a more of an investigation and as a trying to just kind of figure out what was going on. The police in this case knew that TDS was a suspect because they had received a tip from someone who worked at his school. So they were there with the express purpose to question him about.
What was the tip specifically?
The tip, it wasn't.
I heard that this kid shot this kid.
Not specifically that he shot him, but that he was involved.
That he was involved.
Somehow.
Counsel, I'll follow up on the issue that Justice DeWine raised. I went back, looked at the motions to suppress in the briefs in the appellate court, and the first time I found Ferris mentioned is in your reply brief in the appellate court. Did I misread it?
No, Your Honor.
So Ferris, what really wasn't raised at trial?
It wasn't raised at trial, but it was raised at the lower court, the Court of Appeals, at the first opportunity that this delineation of the first and second interrogation happened. But from the very get-go, TDS was explaining that he believed that his statements, all of them, should be suppressed.
What is the effect of the mother telling him at the outset that he had to tell the police officers the truth?
It contributed to the finding that TDS was in custody. TDS's mom is an authority figure in his life, and her pressuring to him to sort of talk to them and tell them, you know, what they wanted to hear, tell the truth, would contribute to, one, the feeling that he couldn't walk away from that situation, among all the other factors that we've listed, and then, two, to contribute to the fact that he didn't knowingly, intelligently, and voluntarily waive his rights. I'm cutting into my rebuttal time, unless there are any further questions. TDS respectfully asks that this court hold that Ferris applies to children and remand his case to the 8th District to determine whether the Ferris factors were met in his specific case.
Thank you. Good morning, Ms. Hatcher.
Good morning, Chief Justice Kennedy. May it please the court. To follow up, first of all, on a question that Justice DeWine had asked the appellant, the post-warning statements are in the record, although not for the motion to suppress. In the probable cause hearing, the station house was Exhibit 77.
Right. So the only thing that the Court of Appeals could review was the evidence for the motion to suppress, correct? That was all that
I believe the trial record was before.
Sure, the trial record was before it, but they're reviewing whether or not the juvenile court judge properly granted the motion to suppress, so they have to look at the evidence that was put in for the motion to suppress.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's my point is that it doesn't appear in the motion to suppress. It appears at the probable cause, and it's trial exhibit 402 for the post-warning statement, and there is an excerpt, like body cam broadly exists for the entire time he was with the police after he left the house. But at trial, an excerpt was presented, and that was state's exhibit 404. And that shows the interview at the crime scene.
But again, that was not part of the motion.
Correct.
Suppress.
But those are where it appears in the record.
Okay, gotcha.
Why doesn't Ferris apply to this case?
Ferris doesn't apply to this case because it wasn't raised in the trial court.
But aren't we supposed to know what our law is in the state? The fact that the post-Miranda statements should be suppressed was raised and preserved. Do you agree with that?
It was in terms of a voluntariness analysis, but Siebert itself actually put that into where that analysis fits in its fourth footnote, where it says that if there's a sequential interrogation, then first the court should determine whether that violates, you know, whether the Miranda warnings were effective for their purpose. And if they find that the Miranda warnings were effective to achieve their purpose, from there you would then go to voluntary waiver, voluntary statement, and the issues that were raised below in this case.
Okay, so and that's the Siebert analysis. Is that equally applicable in Ferris?
Yes, because in Ferris, this court considered both Elstad and Siebert, and it adopted the Siebert factors when it analyzed the two statements that were at issue in Ferris.
But shouldn't the Court of Appeals have at least applied Siebert and Ferris to see if these facts fit?
They would have been doing that sua sponte because nobody in the brief of the appellant, they weren't raising that particular issue.
But aren't the courts supposed to know what the law is?
So there are some factual determinations that are required for a Ferris analysis, and among those, you are actually comparing the two statements. So the factors that the courts are looking at include the completeness and detail of the questioning in the two rounds, the overlapping content of the statements, the timing and setting, the continuity of the police personnel, and the degree to which the questions treat the second round as continuous with the first. And to consider those factors, you would need to look at both interviews in order to see if those factors apply or they don't.
Wait, so, didn't the Court of Appeals have the body cam footage?
They did have the body cam footage, but again, no one raised it to them. The focus on that was the voluntariness analysis.
Couldn't the Court of Appeals, again, the case law is out there, Missouri versus Siebert and State versus Ferris, to say that this is the case law that controls this, but if they don't have the facts in the record because the appellant neglected to put that in, then it would seem that resolution, they could do the analysis and say that resolution goes with the state.
But that analysis would be taking place for the first time in the Court of Appeals rather than in the trial court, which is normally where that would take place.
But I thought that the appeal was because the second, that the post-Miranda statements and confession were not suppressed. Am I correct?
That was raised in the appeal, and that came up in the trial court.
Okay, but let me follow up, because, you know, the kinds of things that the Court of Appeals had in front of it, and you would never get this from reading the opinion, were things like lies, that they knew it was him, they were just trying to figure out if the killing was a murder or an accident. They threatened adult penalties, jail, life in prison, and all they'd gotten was a tip from the school that TDS might be a suspect. They essentially asserted that the evidence that they already had was sufficient to arrest him and even to convict. They rejected every attempt that he made to deny involvement. They felt his heart and it implied a fast pulse showing a lie, and asserted essentially that negative assumptions would be drawn from his silence, sniffing at one point, saying, smell that, smells like some BS, and except they used the full word. So why didn't the Court of Appeals deal with that? Do you know?
So the Court of Appeals did consider what was told in terms of the allegations that what the police were saying was deceptive. And they felt that because TDS was able to challenge what the officers were saying, that wasn't really having an impact on the voluntariness of his later statement.
At age 15 with an IQ of 60.
So his IQ was an issue in the trial court, but they felt that there was some significant malingering there because his verbal acumen, and if you watch the videos and see the way that he's interacting with the officers, he demonstrates like an understanding of DNA evidence, even though he might not have the full scientific understanding, he's certainly able to say, well, you won't find my DNA here, you won't find gunshot residue here. And then meanwhile, in the juvenile court psychiatric clinic, he is, you know, telling those doctors that he doesn't know what evidence is. So there's definitely an indication.
I understand, and I think one thing I left out was then they even told him that his mom would no longer support him if he didn't tell the truth. So if this, you know, if the custodial aspect of this is, I mean, I just don't understand why the Court of Appeals didn't deal with this if you don't think we should be talking about Ferris and Seibert.
So Ferris, again, that would have required the trial court to compare those two interviews. And even if he was in custody for the first interview, even if we take that to be true, then for Ferris to apply, we would still have to compare those two interviews and determine whether the second statements or the subsequent statements were voluntary. And if enough time had passed and these were hours apart, and if the content was the same, and it turns out the content's actually quite different.
So you pointed this out in your briefs. It suggests that we should dismiss this case as improperly allowed because, as you point out, Ferris wasn't raised in the Court of Appeals, wasn't raised in the trial court, wasn't raised in the Court of Appeals until the reply brief, and it would be impossible to do what Ferris requires based on the record from the motion to suppress because it wasn't part of the record at the motion to suppress hearing. You can't review the judge's motion to suppress decision without that. So you couldn't find error unless you could compare the two. And those seem like good points, but so my question to you is, this case came in on a 4-3 vote. The first time we voted, the court voted not to take it. There was no reply from the state. Then there was a motion for reconsideration. Again, no reply from the state. I mean, why not file a brief and point out these problems with the case? I mean, I didn't vote to take it either time, but you know, it would seem like why wouldn't the state point out before it's argued that this was not part of the record?
So, hello. I believe that the original memorandum in support it was delivered to us by email, but it was, I believe, directed to a email address that is kind of like a public sort of access for our office rather than the normal one that, you know, we ask people to serve them at, which, I mean, we're not saying it wasn't served, but we were just unaware that that motion was pending until the court essentially made its decision. But certainly had we responded.
There were actually two chances because there was the memorandum, you know, there was the memorandum of support of jurisdiction the state didn't respond to, and then there was a motion to reconsider it.
I can't speak to that, unfortunately, Your Honor, because that's not within my control.
Is there any issue with the fact that when he made his first confession, it was when his mother had left the room for about a 35-minute period?
So his mother did leave the room, and I believe it was at TDS's request that she asked that he asked his mother to step out. But she didn't go very far because during the video you can hear her sort of saying things from out of the view of the camera. So if you are watching the video, you see that the living room is the kitchen, and then the body cam, while the conversation is taking place on the couch, is sort of pointed in that direction rather than to where the kitchen is. But the fact that you can hear his mother off camera would suggest that she's still nearby, that she hadn't gone very far.
Thank you for that.
Moving on from Ferris to the custody, the state does believe there are factors that might suggest that he's not in custody because this is somewhat similar to a case the Third District dealt with, and this was post-JDB, in which we were dealing with the reasonable child standard for the objective custody analysis. So,
are you expressing this regarding pre-confession or post-confession?
The living room interview, Your Honor.
So you're both?
Well, while he's in the station house, there's no question he's in custody. He's in the police station, he's handcuffed to a chair for a period, and he's been arrested. When he admitted it was an accident, that's when he was Mirandized. He was taken into custody. He's waiting in the living room, I believe, for a police car to arrive to transport him to the scene because he agreed to show the officers where he disposed of, or where he said he disposed of the gun, but the gun wasn't actually found there.
So when he made the confession, the officer said, listen, I got to read you your rights, okay, but we're still going to talk. We ain't done. How much longer did that go after the Miranda rights were read to him before they left the house to go look for where he said the gun was?
There's, after the Miranda warnings, there's an additional 30 minutes on the video. There isn't a lot of conversation that occurs during that time. I think the officers are dealing with logistics. They establish, I think, the only other fact is that he had dumped the gun in a vacant lot on Corlett Avenue. But other than that, they don't continue to question him. He's sitting with his mother and sister. And then that is, I think, 30 minutes of that is the end of the video that's in the record. And then after that, he goes into the police car, and he's actually in the police car for a time, but that video is not on the record because it doesn't really show anything. So there's probably about an hour before he arrives at the scene. And then there's a brief interview with him.
Wouldn't you say when he was in the car for 30 minutes, there's no video because it wouldn't show anything?
Well, it wasn't introduced at trial, but I just wanted to make the court aware that it exists. But I'm just, I suppose, speculating that it wasn't introduced at trial because it was just, it just depicts TDS sitting in a police car.
Okay.
But when the police arrive at his house, I mean, it's established that, you know, the police say, I know the intent of the officer isn't necessarily controlling or even relevant, but they do say that they're not present to arrest him. They don't have that much information yet. They do have this tip from the high school. And what they're trying to do is just get more information from him, and it's pretty well established that just because the police suspect someone, they're not bound to Mirandize everyone. And especially in the own home of a defendant, that's it's pretty consistent that that's less likely to be held to be a custodial situation.
But you didn't really challenge that in the Court of Appeals, did you?
The state did challenge it in the Court of Appeals, but the Court of Appeals rejected it because they said that we cannot appeal a suppression decision after the trial. But we weren't really trying to appeal the suppression decision, just that determination by the court, because that does make a difference. Because if his first interview that was suppressed was not in custody, then the Miranda wouldn't have been necessary. And then that wouldn't have been suppressed on that basis. Custody is a de novo legal determination that I think the Court of Appeals could have made. And frankly, like Criminal Rule 12K or Juvenile Rule 22F require us to be able to certify that we our case is so weak that we can't proceed with it in order to have an appeal of right of suppression, and that option wasn't available to us in this instance because only the first interview was suppressed. But the state did maintain that in the Court of Appeals, in its brief at least, that he was not in custody. And for voluntariness, there are two parts of that inquiry too, so that's looking at coercion and it's looking at the totality of the circumstances for the waiver, and there's no, really special test for juveniles in terms of totality of the circumstances. The United States Supreme Court and this court already takes age into consideration there. I mean, in this court, it was State versus Barker and Bear versus Michael C. in the United States Supreme Court. So there's nothing, just the way that TDS is interacting with the police, like these are factors that I think in Barker, the first district found significant when it was remanded from this court for voluntariness to be considered. And in that case, that court considered that he was articulate, that the questions, you know, he answered the questions appropriately, he didn't demonstrate any misunderstanding. And all of that is true here. Despite what happens on the record regarding his competency, he's always interacting with the police in a way that, you know, doesn't seem to suggest that there's any misunderstanding. So even if this court were to find he was in custody for the first interview and he should have been warned, the waiver of his Miranda subsequent to that was voluntary. And even if we do go back to Ferris, then we have, you know, like these statements were made like hours apart and the content was kind of significantly different. There's much more detail in the second statement, which is sort of more similar to an Elstad situation than a Siebert situation or even a Ferris situation, where in those cases, they were essentially eliciting the same statements twice. So the state would ask that this court dismiss this as improvidently allowed because it is, because it has been waived below, or it would ask you to affirm the decision of the 8th District.
Thank you. Ms. Hammersmith, you have a minute and 39 seconds left.
Thank you, Your Honor. This court should apply Ferris to children for three reasons. First, in this court's past precedent, when adults have recognized constitutional protections, this court has applied those protections to children. For example, in the case AG, which was about the double jeopardy merger analysis. Another example is in DJS about retroactive punishments. Second, This court applying Ferris to children would align with this court's recognized jurisprudence about kids and interrogations, specifically in Barker and JDB, particularly that kids, especially kids like TDS, who are 15, who are in a situation with three white police officers as a black child in Cleveland, are particularly susceptible to psychological influences and false confessions. Third, this would create a consistent rule for law enforcement to apply and for courts to apply in assessing motions to suppress.
Counselor, would your argument be any different if, like TDS, the three officers were black?
No, Your Honor, I don't think it would. I think what the race of the subject of the interrogation is what research has been done on and how they experience police pressure, especially as children. Those just go hand in hand. Okay. The state has given no reason why Ferris should not apply to children, and for that reason, this court should remand this case to the 8th District to hold that Ferris applies in TDS's case. Thank you.
Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement, and you will receive a decision from the court.